Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And today we have a lot of people.
We're having a party.
We are, kind of.
Yeah.
A sad party, but we're having a little party. So let's see, there are six of us in here, but it is January 25th, 2026, and it is the day after Congressman Doug LaMalfa's memorial service. And so we thought, well, we had two of our guys from Washington, D.C., one who was going to be here, one who was trapped because of the airlines. No, was it a storm? So we have those two guys here. So we have George. Say something, George, then they'll know what you sound like.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, and he's from Georgia, so don't try to pretend you're not from Georgia. You'll know he's the guy from Georgia. And then we have Sam.
Sam, the Sham, and the Pharaohs.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What's your nickname, George? Did Doug give you one?
Yeah, so he gave me the nickname Jungle George during the job interview, and then I made a crass heroin joke when I didn't know he was standing behind me later, and so he changed it to Junkie George, and he'd use it interchangeably. Oh,
nice. Okay, I never knew that.
Uh-huh. It was based on how he viewed me for the day. So if he called me Jungle George, then he was happy with me. If he called me Junkie George, I'd done something wrong.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I'm kind of glad we didn't know that already. That's super fun. And Sam, of course, we had to educate him on Little Red Riding Hood was their best song, but Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. And then we have Brenda, a.k.a.
Bun Bun.
Bun Bun. She's always been Bun Bun. So Brenda Haynes, and you probably know her because she, if you live in the Reading area, she's in our district office here. Back to Sam. Sam comes from Anderson. He was our intern back in
2014, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe sooner than that. It's been a really long time.
Yeah.
When he was in high school. And now he works in legislative stuff at the office in Washington. Brenda does field stuff and has for
23 years total, counting back to the assembly days.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. Laura, are you speaking?
Sure.
You have to swivel her over.
Laura, also known as a Dougism as Lara, or Landslide Lara.
Oh, that's right, because she got her Central Committee seat by, what, three votes? He called her Landslide Laura. I forgot about that.
Finally settled on Bella's mom.
Oh, yeah, because her daughter works in the D.C. office. I was always Air Bear. We don't know really where that came from. I think it was just a rhyming thing. And Bill?
Oh, just Willis.
He was Willis.
Hello, Willis.
Doug was really big on nicknames.
Yes, he was.
So we thought we would, I don't know, I don't know if allowed is the right word, but we never did this when Doug was here because borderline inappropriate. Like, a lot of the stuff we do, obviously, is private constituent work and all that. But there's funny stuff that goes along the way. Lots of funny stuff. So I have put together a page for today. Anybody who missed the memorial service yesterday, didn't attend, didn't watch, which was, I'm sure, probably a fair amount of people, although there were 3,000 people there, which was...
Yeah, it was huge.
Enormous. If you would like to watch it before we kind of get rolling along here, I have it on the page for today. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us to the January 25th, 2026 entry, if you're listening to this later, I've got the full video of the service, and then I took some clips out of, like, highlights. We're going to play little deals out of them later on, but Doug's wife did an amazing tribute with her kids that you should listen to. Our chief of staff, Mark Spanagel, he did a really nice job. House Speaker Mike Johnson, I have him on there. I have Doug's cousin. Doug's cousin, it says a cousin tells all or something like that is the name of the clip, but the cousin story was really noteworthy because it was kind of a soup to nuts, start to finish backstory of like how
Doug, from when they were kids all the way up. Yeah.
All the way up. And then Kevin McCarthy, who served with Doug for his entire political career in various forms or fashions, he did an amazing job as well. And I'll add more clips, but Microsoft conspired to destroy my computer, and that was as good as I could get for you by today. But I will add more later. So what else are we missing? I guess I should turn my phone off, huh? So whoever just texted me, thanks for that. No, my phone's still on. And everybody's moving now. Go ahead and try to fix my microphone. It can't be fixed. There's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with everything today. You guys noticing that? The world is just a little dimmer today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Thanks, Bill. Use those man hands and tighten the screw on the microphone. Thank you. All right, where do you guys want to start?
Well, I was just really impressed with the organization they did putting this whole thing together. I mean, they had to employ, I think, 4 buses, maybe 5 buses, to get people there at the right times. And then they had a ton of people, probably 1,000 people showed up in cars that were in a separate overflow building. But so many people, and everything went off without a hitch. And then the security from the staging area, the traffic, they had streets blocked off for all the buses. They had escorts. They had snipers on the roofs, SWAT teams. I mean, it was everywhere you looked, it was going to stay under control. It was pretty amazing.
Okay, so survey. How many police do you guys think were there of all forms or fashions? I mean, you had, and there were some we didn't see.
Yeah.
But there were lots of guys with the squiggle thing behind their ear that you could tell because they don't smile. They really should teach them how to smile. They would blend in better. But the non-smilers, there were a lot of those. A lot of no-smilers.
Oh, yeah. There was.
I mean, hundreds of law enforcement.
Yeah, easy 300. Like, probably more, but easy 300.
That's what I was going to guess, was about 300.
Yeah, everywhere you looked.
Cal Fire was there as well.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you had Chico Police, you had, I'm sure, Reading Police, you had State Police, you had really all levels, which was really great because we had, I didn't write it down, but how many members of Congress?
Oh. Anybody? 40.
Yeah, about 40 members of Congress.
And that's even considering that a bunch of them got stuck in the snow in D.C. and want to do something in D.C., so they're already planning something else. When we all go back,
I'm not in charge of that guest list, though.
No,
I'm just going to put that,
put that down
right
that's
now.
That's been foisted on me.
So, has it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's really
God.
Cool.
Well, Sam, I can tell you should sleep now and eat now in preparation for your great task.
Well, another interesting thing was when you speak about the members of Congress, they actually flew into Beale Air Force Base on Air Force Two. And
I have a clip about that, but I can't play it because I can't communicate.
They got their own airport, everything, and they got there. I think they got there before everybody else because they were there when we got there.
Yeah,
and, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know. Doug was not a guy that was lobbied easily. He refused to be lobbied pretty often. So I would go to these. You know, the fundraisers, a lot of lobbyists have reached out trying to go to his funeral because rather than lobbying him, they were just friends with him, or he taught them how to repair a car or something. So all these random, you know, rail car association lobbyists and charter school people who are like, hey, so like, I can't go back to California for the funeral, so when are we doing something? And if you're not doing something, we'll do something. So it's just been sort of a testament to how many people wanted to be there or wanted to be at something. I probably have like 300 text messages from random DC folks who just want to do a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But over the years, okay. So over the years, there are lots of people who are, people think, oh, so-and-so is so incredibly important and everyone loves them, blah, blah, blah. But really, they're just media hogs. Doug hated doing that. And if something great, George should speak to this because he tried to be the media guy for a while, which was really like running uphill every day.
I gave it a good attempt.
No, you did, but Doug was tough about that.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Because he didn't want to be like, oh, hey, look at me, I did this big thing, and...
Yeah, that was Doug.
Well, that's not very... Tell us more. Tell us more, George. Don't make me call you Junkie George.
No, please.
Be Jungle George for us today.
I remember during my first interview with him, he was very adamant. He's like, I want to sound like someone who's listening to the radio in their garage can hear me speak and understand without any of the extra bells and whistles. And so he reaches behind him and he produces this whiteboard that has about 20 random words on it. And he was like, what do you think this is? And 23-year-old, fresh out of an SEC school with no idea what the heck he's doing me, is still trying to get past the fact that I am talking to a sitting U.S. congressman. And so I just go, I have no idea. And he's like, tranche, this word. I don't like it. Don't ever use it.
Tranche.
And so as I...
Tranche was a super big pet peeve.
It was a huge pet peeve. I mean, I never used it anyways. But as I stayed on and as I worked with him, the list of words that were forbidden would get longer and longer. And it got to a point where I had to sit down with him and I just said, Chief, I'm going to be honest with you. We're getting too far here, I think, and now I'm trying to like piece together very like complex sentences with very weird words that I'm pulling out of the thesaurus because I can't use simple things like fight or community. Yeah.
Try to write a letter of support for a fire resilience project for a forested community without using the word resilience or community. I don't know a single person who has used the word municipalities in day-to-day, and both George and I would have to, instead of saying, you know, our towns, we'd have to say, you know, many municipalities, which municipalities is a clunky word, right? But it wasn't community, so it was allowed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still think that he would hear someone that he didn't like say a word, and he'd be like, I'll be caught dead before I ever say something like that.
So we have access. I have the picture. I have the whiteboard. Access, backbone, bad actor.
Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Where'd that come from?
Bad actor was basically just one morning. He had seen someone say it on TV, and it had just... He was just in a mood about it, and so he comes into the back office, and he's like, Junkie George. And I was like, oh, and I was like, it's 9 o'clock. What did I do already? And so I just turn around, and I'm like, yes, Chief? And he's like, put bad actor on that whiteboard. And I was like, both bad actors that you put it on there. And I don't ever use it. Don't ever use it. Yes, sir. I'll put it on right now.
He one day came in and it was rubric. He came in. He heard somebody use it on the cell phone on the plane. Some like corporate like lawyer or something. And he literally, the door came open. He said, "Hey kids," like he did every single time he came into DC. But usually he would sit around and talk to us. He went straight to the back of the room, pointed at the board, and was like, rubric, put it on there. and then he turned to everybody, and he made us each. He said, what do you think a rubric is? And he made everybody answer, and everybody had a different answer. And so he was like, see? Nobody knows. But it needs to be on the board. Yeah, but rubric, he said, generally, if you could imagine a politician with their thumb over their fist, like, looking out into a crowd, sort of moving their hand with their thumb over their fist, saying the word, it should be on the board. And we hadn't discovered all of them yet.
The phrase, there is no place for it, dot, dot, dot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's on
here. He hated that one.
What's Einstein quote?
Oh goodness.
Because that's all it says on the board is Einstein quote. So there must have been a certain Einstein quote.
I'm trying to remember.
We both didn't use it.
Yeah, we both didn't use it. I know that much.
Stay away from Einstein.
Debris.
Yeah.
Debris was bad.
Which, try writing about, wildfire recovery
with no debris.
Clearing away debris. Yeah.
Huh.
No.
Clearing away fallen trees, uprooted limbs.
Oh, embolden and empower.
Yeah.
No. I remember, I am responsible for the creation of the embolden entry. That was a big black mark. See, sometimes I would use these words, and I think he already was like, I don't like it. But see, he wouldn't have, like, it wouldn't have manifested on the board yet, so I would draft something. And then he'd read it and be like, I don't like this word. I don't like this word. We don't use this word. And I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I cannot read your mind. So I'm just trying to go with what I got.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do not hesitate.
Yeah. Do not hesitate to reach out to me or my office. He hated that. He was like, who's hesitating? Like, there's no hesitating happening.
Men and women. That was from my job interview when he was pointing his Nerf gun at me, and he was like, it's December, because I was interviewing December 7th, 2022, and he's like, it's Pearl Harbor Day, so if you got this job, what would your post about it be? And so I just, you know, still scared out of my wits, just start rambling off about December 7th, and then I said, we should always support our brave men and women in uniform, and he just kind of scowled at me and shook his head. And it's like, I don't know, brave men and women. I don't like that phrase. And so that was my first time beating
trope.
Beating Joe Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Trope was out.
Had to go with boys and girls.
Yeah. Stakeholders.
Yeah. Yeah, stakeholders.
Hated the stakeholder thing.
Yeah,
we did a. I was telling George last night on the way home. We did a thing up in Wairika about the dams, and a new day. Doug hated stakeholders so much, and we were kind of laughing about it. So we decided, hey, we're going to go over to the nursery, over to Terry's nursery. So we got a huge pile of stakes, like that you would use to mark out property or whatever. So everybody had a wooden stake. So we were the stakeholders. We took all sorts of pictures as stakeholders, which was funny. Oh, robust.
Yes.
How could we have forgotten that one? New normal. Hated that one. Oh, here's rubric. It's kind of in small.
Well, the list got longer, and the confines of the small size of the whiteboard
grapple.
Required the words to get smaller.
We're all grappling with
grapple.
Tough times.
Yeah, hated grapple. How did experience get on there?
He got tired. Is experience and journey. People would, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Journey's
on here too.
In your weight loss journey, or in my, you know, I remember the experience when he was like, everything's an experience now, right? He's like, we don't need to say that. You know, if you go hike a mountain, you don't have a mountain hiking experience. You hiked a mountain. Like, just tell me about it. I think he made me write experience on the board. Sometimes, us in the DC office, you know, like a congressman is busy, and then he was extra busy, and also didn't want to, always listen to us, and so sometimes to make sure he was actually reading our emails, we would send him really long sentences with as many of those words as we could fill
in. Just to see if you get a provoke a response.
I have a quick one. What do you think of My Truth?
Oh.
That didn't even make the board. It wasn't even an option.
There was no My Truth. There was no Our Truth. There was only the truth.
Heaven help the DC staffer who used the phrase My Truth unironically.
Could you imagine that? They don't get the Nerf gun or the nickname in
Christ
the interview.
Christ himself could walk through that door. He ain't going to help you.
You would go out the window. But I remember one of the first times I was nervous, I had like a bunch of bills that I needed to sign off on, and he was in California for a long time. And He wasn't taking my phone calls. He wasn't answering my texts. He was sending me Instagram memes
of cats and dogs. Yeah, he loved the animal ones.
With
funny things.
With me, it was mostly tanks and the Beatles. He would send me like Beatles like clips, and then he would send me videos of tanks, and he would just say, "Pretty cool, man." Which I don't know, that became sort of a thing with us. But one time I needed an answer on these four or five bills, and so the header of the email was a robust tranche of bills for our community. And I got an answer in like 5 minutes. And the answer was the real answer, and then in like below everything, he was like, "Are you trying to get fired, or is this like a bit?"
Sorta.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Hey, so Alex, how are we doing on our clips from our audio, or should we take a break?
I have to, like, switch the mics back and forth. So
no worries.
I do have Speaker Johnson up. Hang on, let me find it.
Oh. We could play him and then...
Okay.
You could snag some music on the back, whatever you want, and then...
Yeah, we'll have the Beatles go out with us.
Yes, oh, and then we will be right back after that. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh,
Speaker Mike Johnson.
So colleagues have been saying those kinds of things, sharing the stories and anecdotes for the last few weeks, and so have others. We on the plane today on Air Force Two, we brought a group of young House floor staff members. They wanted to be on the flight. They wanted to be here to pay their respects. You know why? Because they looked up to Doug as a mentor and a father figure. They wanted to fly all the way across the country just to be here and pay their respects. It goes across the community, across the Capitol. I was told a story on the plane over here. One of our colleagues said that one of the sweet ladies that serves us, she sits in the information desk in the tunnel that goes between the Capitol and the House office buildings. And this friend of ours said that she was sitting there last week in tears because she so missed the gentle giant that took the time to stop and smile and use his nickname for her and see how her day was going. That's the kind of guy he was.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone, and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are living. In my life, I've loved them all.
Well, I walk back down. No, I walk back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I walk back down. No, I
fitting. So we have a list of music. We'll get to that.
So
Sam got a phone in.
Live from a listener, Mrs. Grace in our DC office. The Einstein quote is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We were forbidden from using that.
Because we all knew that already?
We all knew that. And also I think he determined that was a misattributed quote.
Oh.
There were a lot of things like that where he was like, he didn't even say that, and so you couldn't use it. But that was the Einstein quote.
Nice. There were always, well, so way back. Let's go to the Wayback Machine. So in the Wayback Machine, 23 years ago, so this is Bun Bun. How did you meet him?
I met him in March of 2002, and my husband and I had gone to a Shasta County Farm Bureau spring social, they called it, and it was really big in those days, and the whole bottom floor of the Civic Auditorium was just tables of people. And I was cutting through the crowd to go check my silent auction bid, and our sheriff at the time, Jim Pope, wonderful man, he said, Brenda, come here. I want to introduce you to this guy. And I remember looking up at this 6'5" guy and shaking his hand and said, nice to meet you. And I took him over to our table and introduced him to my husband and the folks at that table. And that started a process. My husband and I thought, well, if this guy is going to literally get off the tractor and go to Sacramento, we're going to help him. We'll help on your campaign. And we didn't know what a campaign was. I thought, well, probably sitting at somebody's kitchen table, stuffing envelopes, maybe. I had no idea.
You wish.
Yeah. And, I've lived in Shasta County for 100 years, and I knew a lot of people. So I was taking him around and introducing him to people. And neither one of us at the time actually knew what a campaign entailed. We were just out meeting people and
colonizing.
What do you do, and what is your problem with government? And, oh, we got to fix that. We got to fix this. We got to fix that. And so that was in March of 2002. I think Sam was in preschool.
And we learned yesterday he ran for office 24 times and never lost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if someone would ask me how many times did he run, but we got a lot of information yesterday. It was extraordinarily informational. Had an amazing cast of characters that spoke, including, and had Microsoft not conspired against me this morning, I really wanted to get the clip of his sixth grade teacher who spoke at the funeral, which was just super fun. Ooh, Doug got in trouble when he was in sixth grade. Threw a rock at a fan. He and another kid, there was a huge, huge, huge fan in the back of the school. And the teacher heard these weird noises and goes out there, and Doug and this other kid are whipping rocks at the fan to see if they'd shoot back at him. Which is really why Doug had so little opposition in campaign, because there was never any, he had no weird, ooh, hope that doesn't get out, you know. And all the only stuff they did, like, remember Jim Reed in that debate in Chico, said that Doug sold his water. Doug sold his water. I thought his mom was going to leap out of her chair and run up and strangle him. And afterward, a family friend, actually, who worked for the DA's office at the time, I think, she got up and, I mean, got right in his face, like up in Reed's face, and said, "They have never sold their water. What are you saying that for?" And he actually said out loud, he said, "Well, you have to understand, if I'm ever going to beat him, I am going to have to lie about him."
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Put that one in the memory bank.
Yeah. There was a, when I was a field rep, I was not there on my field rep duties. I was just having fun. I went to the Red Bluff chili feed, and there was a candidate for Congress who was running against Doug, who was sort of wandering around like the guys in the movies that say the world's ending, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he was just yelling, you know, "Doug LaMalfa, like, he's never anywhere, nobody ever sees him, but I'm here in your community." So I always had my work phone on me, right? Always. And I downloaded the calendar, and I pulled up the calendar, and I stood next to him. I followed him around for an hour. And I was like, "Well, actually, Congressman LaMalfa is here and here and here." And at the time, it was unfortunate, but it was the perfect thing. He was at a funeral for a firefighter. And so he was wandering around telling everybody, you know, "Congressman LaMalfa is not in your community, and I am." And then I'd be, "Well, he's at this funeral for the firefighter, and then he's going to go to the Dairyville thing, and then he's going to go to this." And I followed him, just out of spite, I followed him around for like an hour and a half. And he more or less told me the same thing. He was like, "Listen, like, you know, I need to be more in touch with the community than Doug." And I was like, "That's really, like,
it's super not happening."
I was like, you're super not doing that.
I remember Patrick Jones told me one time, he goes, "You know, every time I go to some little kid's birthday party, I look in the backyard to see if Doug's back there."
Yeah. And the next week, you know, I would go to the Tama County Board of Supervisors meetings for Doug. Doug had me go to those almost every week. And this gentleman went to the Board of Supervisors, and he was, you know, "Doug LaMalfa isn't in your community. He's not here. He doesn't care about you." And so he got done speaking, and the board, some of which agreed with me, some of which did not agree with me on things, said, "You know, we'd like to recognize Sam Dorsey from Congressman LaMalfa's office for being so consistently around helping us with our problems." And that really, you know, like, if he couldn't be there, he made sure somebody else was there.
Exactly.
And for things that, you know, my friends would be like, why are you driving to this thing in the middle of the night? Why are you going to this, you know, three-person meeting?" I was like, "Well, because
that's what we do.
That's what we do. That's our job."
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, if we just showed up, can you imagine? You just show up when there's like a big thing and there's media or whatever.
Yeah, doesn't look good.
But that isn't real.
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't where you meet anybody, for one, because everybody's trapped in a chair. You meet people when you go to stuff where you hang out with people. But I always called it colonizing. You know, you go to some new place, there'd be, you know, people you didn't know, and you go, so did we pull into some wayward town. So let's see, for me, I covered Siskiyou, Modoc, and Lassen counties. We should talk about that a little too. So in the field side. And so we'd go to some far-flung place, and Doug's like, do we know these people? Have we colonized this area yet? So I'm like, oh yeah, we've colonized here, but we can do better. It was always pretty funny. And Brenda, you did mostly Shasta.
Shasta, yeah. Well,
and Tehama.
About that, everybody was important to him.
Yes.
Every person. And one example of that was back in the assembly days, one of the first meetings we had was we were coming out of the meeting and walking across a dirt parking lot, and Doug was driving a nice Mustang at the time, and there was a kind of a beat-up car sitting next to our car, and a man got out of the car. I was watching him. He stuck his hand out.
Because we're suspicious.
Yes.
Okay, but just be clear.
He stuck his hand out to shake Doug's hand, and he said, is this your car? And they started talking cars and motors and speed and all that. And after a few minutes, the man said, well, I'm sure you have more important people to go talk to. And Doug looked at him and said, I'll never forget it. He said, no, there's really nobody more important than you. And just looked at him like, you know, do you have anything else to say? And I thought, oh, my gosh, what an honor to work for a man like that.
Yeah. And that was the part that the people who didn't, you could always tell, I think we could all say the same thing. Anybody who called the office who said, oh, he's just some millionaire, you know, what? It's like, okay, he's still wearing this. Well, he is still wearing, probably currently, the same boots he was wearing when I met him 15 years ago. And he lives in a manufactured home on a dirt road on a farm. Like, never... you know,
we
he had a lot of ties, though. Oh. Apparently, some of them he took from Sam. I've learned that he was a tie thief, actually.
So, yeah, they were like, "Hey, can you? You know, you've been with him for a long time." It was me and the scheduler have been back in D.C. and they were like, "Let's go through his closet, make sure you know everything's okay." Because the closet was sort of it had sort of looked like a bomb had gone off. So we
like his car,
yeah,
it looked like a recycling center.
It looked like, and we needed to make sure there wasn't food in there. Like,
oh,
we didn't know
yes.
what was going on in there. So we were cleaning it out, and yeah, like
tacos in the pockets.
I have nicer. Yeah. I thought it was really funny because I was like, you know, I'm 29 and I have nice, many nicer suits than my congressman.
How many did he have? Two.
Yeah,
three.
Yeah, three, yeah. and some sort of like swap out. You know, you got them at Ross. you know, but
yeah.
he had this mountain of ties. And I'm going through it because they're literally falling out. Like, they're falling on the floor. So I'm having to, like, stuff them back into the floor or under the hooks. And I pick one of them up and I go, wait a minute.
This is mine.
That I've been looking for like 4 months. And, you know, I get, you know, when you're disorganized, you just sort of,
yeah,
like,
sure,
absorb things.
Yeah, sure. Things accumulate.
But, yeah. When it, sort of related to the everybody's important. So a while ago, one of my mentors in college, a very far left professor, came to visit me, and
because we both went to Humboldt State, so we know what happens over there.
Yes.
Okay. Go on.
yeah. So this, and I told him, I was like, hey, you know, we got kind of a lefty, you know, and he is just infinitely warm to her, and he takes her into the Republican Club. Like the secret, you know, the and he takes there and he has dinner with her and me, during, you know, a pretty high stakes vote. And, he's just hanging out with her. And, you know, sort of the more professional staff, from other offices are like, you're letting this woman in here. Like, she's spying on us. And he's just hanging out with her, and she, you know, she's a professor of religion. And so he's sort of leaned back in his chair, and he did they kept talking about it at the funeral, the Doug, where he leans back and
yeah,
he sort of looks
down. Yeah, gives
down,
you the look.
And he goes, yo, teach. You're a religious professor, right? And she was like, yeah. And he's like, what's the best one? And she's like, what do you mean the best one? And he goes, what's the best religion? And
way to cut through the wheat.
Yeah. And he just had fun with sort of whoever he was plopped down with. And she was kind of afraid of him because he's a Republican congressman and she's a far left college, you know, coastal elite. And they, I don't know, she had a good time. Just made everybody that hung out with him just like hang out with him.
Yeah.
And that's how he was.
So, Alex said he has Mark's clip up. So Mark is our chief of staff. And he had the, I don't know, enviable, unenviable task, I guess, depending on how you look at it, of doing the eulogy for all of us on our behalf, basically, at the memorial yesterday. And
I might not have the right clip. I'll play it for you.
Isn't the one I'd have from 109?
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, if not, we'll find the right clip.
Okay.
Here we go.
Were regularly sprinkled into conversation. He'd work them into anything. His favorite project to criticize, high-cost rail. Besides bringing back the term boondoggle, he would regularly make fun of the price tag, and in true Dr. Evil fashion, $100 billion.
That was the right clip?
Yep.
Right, excellent.
Yeah, with the little finger up from Dr. Evil in Austin Powers, because, you know, everything related to some funny movie or The Godfather or something like that. But the part that was fun for all of us is that Governor Newsom was sitting in the front row while the high-cost rail was being basically mocked and
exposed,
and people were all laughing, actually. So he was in a very small bubble. Any chance we have David Reed's clip cued?
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
Okay,
so I have McCarthy.
So he. Oh, which one do we have? Okay, which one do we have for him?
Yeah, I can play it now.
Do it.
If you knew Doug, I know you did. I knew him his entire political career. And Doug taught me so many lessons. He wouldn't preach to you, he'd show you. And I called them Dougisms. And that's what I want to share with you today. The things he taught me. He taught me how to be a friend. We were in the minority, but we had fun, Sacramento. He was smart politically. In Sacramento, they used to give you a car. You'd drive up and drive back. And Doug wouldn't get a car. He just wouldn't get a car. I said, what are you doing? You got to drive around. He waited. The stories came out of everybody got a car. Then he got his. And he didn't just get any car. He got a Ford Mustang. And he would zip into that Capitol. And he had the best parking spot. But you have to understand, when you're a Republican in Sacramento, your car is parked three in. You got to ask two people to move before you can get yours out. But Doug came in and he had the parking spot right there. I just couldn't figure that out. I go to the parking attendant. I think I'm nice. I talk to him all the time. I said, how does Doug get that parking spot? I'm the leader. I said, old Mr. LaMalfa, he brings us all those peaches in the pickup truck every year.
Don't laugh silently. They can't see you. You have to laugh out loud in here.
Those peaches in the back of that little red Ford truck.
No, speak straight in because your voice is really quiet. Yeah, move it.
The peaches in that little red truck. Much he better. Came into the district office one day and he said, hey, Bren, you want some peaches? And I said, well, sure, that sounds great. So we stepped outside, and here in the back of that little red truck were peaches, just not in a box and not in bags. They were just rolling around in the bed of that truck. And he had been on curvy roads and accelerate and brake and whatever. And those poor little peaches, many of them were kind of bruised up a bit. But I took a whole bunch of those peaches home, and I came back the next day. I made a peach pie, and that was my way of thanking him for all those peaches.
This is really quick, but related to that, bringing fruit to people. He flew back every week, back and forth, and when it was the right season, he would stop at usually Burleson's or one of the on Highway 99, one of the fruit stands, or Julie's, and he would pick a huge bag or two of oranges and he would bring them, and he would take them as his carry-on to D.C. to give to all of us in the D.C. office. And so he would come in with just a lug of oranges in a backpack. And the oranges were not for him. He would just plop them on the table and leave. And, you know, you kind of think about it. This is a guy who's spending his own money and spending a carry-on slot to drag oranges back for his staff. you know, he was the kind of guy that would do that.
It's no wonder we had such a back mouse problem in the DC.
Yeah, yeah, it's, oh, my God. So, how about the tacos? It's tacos and Red Bluff.
Yeah.
He hated waste. Hated waste. Anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hated waste. We go to this town hall. No, it wasn't a town hall. Maybe it was a town hall. Anyway, it was in Red Bluff at the Veterans Memorial Building. A lot of people. So, one of our staff, Jennifer Horn, who was really a germaphobe, we'll just out her here, since she's not here, so, she was really very germ conscious. And she had bought a bag of tacos at Taco Bell, because Doug said, well, hurry up, go to Taco Bell, get some snacks, because there's no food, you know. So, these tacos were probably 60 cents a piece. I mean, this wasn't anything fancy, right? So there were a couple left in the sack, and they're like, you have to sit down. It's time to start. Doug's got to speak, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, Jennifer throws the sack in the garbage, but Doug doesn't see it. This thing goes on for three and a half hours after you talk to everybody and put away the chairs and do all the stuff. We're getting ready to leave. And Doug's like, didn't we have a couple tacos left? And everybody's like, yeah. He goes, well, where are they? And Jennifer goes, I threw them away. And he's like, no. Can't throw them away. What do you mean threw them away? She goes, I threw them away. You can't have them. It's been 3.5 hours. You'll get botulism. And he's like, all right, which can did you throw them in?
Oh, no.
The good news is he did not find them. But she was horrified. She's like, I'm not telling you. But it became a thing. So after that, every time we went to a deal and Jennifer was there, he's like, you wasted two tacos. It's like, here's the $1.20. Yeah. I don't know. It's just funny. He just hated the idea of waste.
He hated waste and
government or personal.
Your rite of initiation in D.C. was, you know, was, he would just tell you, go get the meats. And you would, I didn't know what that meant the first time he texted it to me. But pretty much everybody, when you first come to D.C., your job is to go get the meats. And what the meats are is he goes to a couple breakfasts. And they just throw away the food when everybody's done.
Oh, whoops.
And he could not stand that.
Yeah.
So he himself was doing it, but if he had to go somewhere, which he was pretty busy, so yeah. Actually we'd go somewhere, he would send staff after him to go and get everything that otherwise would get thrown out and bring back for the rest of the staff. He did that. He went to the prayer breakfast. He went to a couple briefing breakfasts. Pretty much anything he went to where he found out they were throwing away food. He was known on the Hill for his pocket sandwiches because he would just sort of show up mostly to the younger staff who, you know, and he would just like pull out like an Egg McMuffin and just be like, hey, do you want this? And the problem was, is, you know, it would be like 3 o'clock and you'd be like, well, how long have you had this Egg McMuffin? Everybody at the funeral said he wouldn't take no for an answer, and he super wouldn't take no for an answer with his like weird pocket sandwiches. And we, you know, people would throw them away, and then you had to hide it from them. You couldn't let him know that you threw away the pocket sandwich, because he'd go into this whole, you know, like a farmer, like spent all of his time on the eggs and the wheat and the meat, and an animal died for you, and so everybody sort of, whether they ate him or not, was like, yes, thank you, sir. Like, it was great. But he, yeah, I mean, he probably, he fed all of us all the time with just, like, random bacon and pocket sandwiches.
He would tell the staff to go get the meats.
Go get the meats.
Oh, my God.
You learned strategic garbage disposal very quickly in that office if you didn't want to get caught wasting food.
Yeah, there was he catered something once, and we had a bunch of cannoli in the refrigerator. We couldn't eat it all. It was trays of cannoli.
Really?
Yeah, so it was weeks. It was weeks of old cannoli. And he wouldn't let us throw it away. We'd go to do it, and he'd be like, that's perfectly good. So we had to wait until he would go home for a couple weeks, and then we'd throw it away.
It's kind of funny. I got him a magnet up at the Aiden store. They have all that, you know, eclectic stuff up there at the Aiden store. And I found this magnet, and it was like a 1950s mom, like a Leave It to Beaver's mom, with the little apron on and her daughter, and, you know, they superimpose writing above it. And the little girl is looking up at her mom, and there's a refrigerator there, and she looked at her, and she's and it says, "It's fine, honey. Expiration dates are for the week."
That was really his attitude.
And I was like, oh, it's Doug. I got to get him this.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It was pretty funny. I do believe that's what he thought. So I have another one queued up that we can our brakes are all screwed up today. Everything is screwed up today. You know what I mean? Everything's just off. So thanks for riding with us on Screwed Up Off Day. But so David Reed was Doug's original chief of staff in the assembly. And he spoke at one point, but since he lives in Texas, he had a little more leeway than maybe some of the folks who were on the speaking list. And the governor was sitting right in the front row, and so there was some fun. Like, you wouldn't think it like a memorial for someone that everybody was really going to miss, that there would be any fun, but there was some fun. So it was like you cried, you laughed. There was a whole range of things, but we pulled this one for you. So here's David Reed.
Doug took me to get my first pair of cowboy boots, which I wear today at Diamond W in Chico, to meet his friend David Halimi. And I always got on him to trim that big old Grizzly Adams beard. Doug is one of my closest friends. You know, I believe politics is one of the ultimate crucibles for human beings. It really is an endeavor that boils people down to who they truly are and reveals their true character to others. And within that crucible, Doug revealed himself always to be a very good man. Along with that childlike joy he always possessed, he was very comfortable as a leader. Unafraid of speaking out where others were timid, he was always courageous. And even in the face of a grotesque racial gerrymander perpetrated here in California by unscrupulous politicians, Doug LaMalfa was undaunted. And even on that last evening, I was able to spend with Doug in Washington, December 3rd. He was ready. He was enthusiastic for the campaign ahead. And I am certain that Doug would have once again defied his critics and been victorious in this campaign. You know, it's said that people may not remember what you said, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And Doug LaMalfa always made people feel good and feel important. That was his superpower. Doug's genuine interest in other people, his inspired ability to notice and recall our names, our stories, and significant events in our lives. This superpower enabled Doug to forge meaningful relationships with literally thousands of people during a very consequential and all too brief life. No, our friend Doug was not a typical politician. He was a servant of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Called to serve in this very noble calling of public life, where he would lead us, inspire us, and model for us all how we too can live more meaningful lives in service to one another. indeed, Doug LaMalfa was a great man. Because he was a good man. And most of all, he was my friend. Rest well, brother man, until we meet again. Thank you.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Dead Love is Johnny Cash. Actually, Ring of Fire was his ringtone for 1,000 years. Remember that?
Yes, yes. Can I tell a story real fast?
Do it.
There was, I think it was 2008, a really big fire, bad fire year. And the Anderson Fairgrounds, Shasta District Fairgrounds in Anderson, was a big fire city. All the agencies and everybody was set up down there as the command headquarters. And Doug and I walked in to a tent full of all these important fire people. And just as he walked in the door, they were in the process of the meeting because we were traditionally a couple of minutes late. We come walking in the door. His phone goes off.
Please ring of fire.
And it was, I fell into a burning ring of fire. And the crowd erupted. So he just stood there like, hello.
I'm here.
Nothing like having the perfect ringtone, right?
Yeah.
So Laura pointed out that we had just in our little quickie overview of security, Butte County Sheriff. I didn't bring the program. What a great idea. Here, you've got the program. Read on.
Oh, and also the Unified North State Honor Guard brought in the colors.
They did an amazing job.
They did a very good job.
And the bagpipes, yes. Of course, so that we could cry extra.
Yeah, they really had to end things with Amazing Grace. Like you know.
At least they didn't do taps.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of sad they didn't do taps, but I was like, I'm like dehydrated.
That was the thing. I kind of collected myself by the end, and then they were like, oh, now we're going to all play Amazing Grace and the bagpipes. And I was like, great, cool.
Yeah.
I had,
one more cry.
Yeah, I had fallen so to pieces. The guy in front of me was... It was
Tim Moore.
Yeah, Tim Moore. Congressman Tim Moore, like, grabbed me and was like... Oh, and I was like, this is what an experience.
Oh, my gosh. So I told you, everybody thinks, 2 hours, it's going to take, how are we going to have so much, we're not going to have time. We're almost jacked up against the news. So I don't know what Alex has in mind for us. We're trying to read each other's minds from two different rooms. Oh, I got a thumbs up. So we have to take a break. I just want to point out again that this is just kind of a little impromptu staff gathering post-memorial for Congressman Doug LaMalfa. And we've listed a whole bunch of things on the webpage for today that would get you to viewing things that are I think you would really like, actually, and you would get to know him a little better. And you would stop saying that all politicians are horrible. It's good to know that there are good people who do run, who do get elected, and do serve for a long time. You can find it at WeThePeopleRadio.us.